Good morning. So last time we talked about describing circuits. We answered this idea of, well, we need to move values around. We're going to learn wires. And really we're usually going to be talking about wire bundles as wires because we have values that are more than one bit. Physically, probably the simplest way to represent that is a bunch of wires, one for each bit. But we'll draw that as sort of one line on our pictures and our code. We're going to write that as one value that we move around. And in HLRS, we talked about, well, we can declare wires and we can connect them, which looks like an assignment. Since it represents connection, when we're simulating what happens in the circuit, you know, we're saying, oh, if I need to figure out what's on this wire, I look at what it's connected to. I don't care if that connection happens later or earlier in the file. It doesn't affect how things are going to work physically. So the order doesn't matter. Then we mentioned, well, if we just have wires and things that do computation, well, that's not actually good enough to make useful things like, say, counting. So we need some way to store values in a stable way. And so our idea was we'd have these registers that would hold values that were constant, so we didn't have to worry about feeding changing values back into a computational circuit. And we could use these to control when we move on from one step to the next in our hardware by having this global clock signal, which would have these periodic rising edges. And on those rising edges, the registers would change what they're doing from one value to the next value in a controlled way, so you don't have to worry about seeing in between values and having them affect our results. So once we had storage and computation, it turned out we wanted to do some decisions. So we needed some way of making decisions. And this is a thing that comes up a lot when we're talking about instructions, that, well, we want to do one thing for one instruction and a different thing for a different instruction. And we have this sort of hardware device called a multiplexer or a MUX, which, you know, we have several inputs and we choose between those inputs based on some other signal, which we can think of as kind of a hardware if, else if, else if sort of construct. And in our HCL code, we represent these, we abstract these away as case expressions, where our assumption is that in the hardware, we could implement this with this multiplexer and some circuitry that is going to look at all our expressions, our conditions, and choose which index to select in that MUX. So questions on these things we covered last time. Also questions on the quiz. Okay, so I'll talk briefly based on quiz scores about quiz question 4 and 5. So quiz question 4 was asking about i10 bytes. And if you, from our last lecture, we said that i10 bytes is the name of the output of the instruction memory, which takes as its inputs PC, and PC is the address to read from. So based on the value of the PC input, it's going to read 10 bytes out from PC to PC plus 9 inclusive. And in this case, our input to PC was set to XFOO. XFOO was set to capital YFOO plus 1, and the initial value of capital YFOO was 0. So the initial value of PC was 1. So initially we were reading from 1 to 10 inclusive. 10 is 0xA in hex. So that's why we selected the two answers we did for question 4. And we have one number coming out, but that number had to come from multiple bytes just because it's too big for one bit. And then we had question 5. So question 5 was very similar to an example in lecture. And we had two registers, foo and bar. And we had these statements indicating how their inputs were set and their outputs were used. And based on how the registers were declared, we know initially the outputs of the registers were 0 and 5. And if we evaluate what their inputs would be, the input to foo would be 0 plus 1, or 1. The input to bar would be 1 xfoo plus 5, or 6. So after one rising edge, their outputs would be 1 and 6. We evaluate the expressions again. We get 1 plus 1 or 2 for foo, and 2 plus 6 or 8 for bar. And we were asked for the output after two rising edges. So this 8 for bar was the answer we were looking for. So questions on anything from the quiz? Uncomfortable. Yes? So you said for two rising edges would account for y bar becoming what x bar is. So each rising edge is one occurrence of y bar becomes x bar. So in my example here, the first time that happens, we have our initial values where x bar is initially 6, y bar becomes that. And then we have a second time it happens where x bar is 8. So each rising edge is one occurrence of that. And I think I've accounted for both here, unless I'm misunderstanding what your meaning is. Okay, other questions? Comments? Okay, so last time we were building, using muxes, we were building processors that implemented parts of our instruction set. Let's talk about doing a different instruction. So we're going to say, how do we build a processor that executes adds? So our add instruction has a 2-byte encoding, and it has something you haven't seen before in instruction encodings that we've implemented yet, which is has 2 4-bit register indices. Now let's assume we're just implementing this. To know how to make this work, we need to know about registers. And one thing we could do is we could say, well, I know how to make a PC register. I could use the same ideas to make an RAX, RCX, and so on register. That's an option. That's not what we're going to do. Instead, we're going to supply you with a built-in set of those registers in a component we're going to call a register file. And this is mainly to save you time, and also because it makes it a lot easier to grade if we know where RAX is. So our register file is going to look like this sort of abstractly. I'm going to go through each of these inputs and outputs. So we have register indices to read, 2 of them, and each of them has a corresponding value output. And this works very much like our instruction memory. So we put in a register index, and we get the value of that register, just like in the instruction memory, when we put in an address, we get the value of that address. Same idea, except instead of addresses, we have register indices, which was that table we saw for what goes in the instruction. And like our instruction memory, this happens within a clock cycle. So once we put in the value, the index of the register we want to read, we'll get its value out without any clock signal, rising edge having to do anything. It's just going to happen in the same cycle. We also have registers to write. So for that, we specify the index of the register we want to write, and we specify the data we want to put there. And like with our normal registers, the actual write is going to happen at the rising edge of the clock signal. So at the rising edge of the clock, the register file is going to look at the index of the register we want to write, and it's going to store the value we supplied at that time. So all the writes are going to happen at that rising edge. They're not going to happen in the middle of the clock cycle. We're going to set up their inputs in the middle of the clock cycle. We're not actually going to do the write until then. So questions? Register file timing. So one thing you might notice is that the way that these writes work, it looks like that we always have to write to a register. There's going to be a fix for that, which is that register number 15, which if you remember wasn't a valid register number in our instructions, we're going to use that to indicate not to write. So if we supply register number 15, the write's not going to do anything at that rising edge of the clock. And if we read from register number 15, we're always going to get 0. Now, as I said, this is a built-in component, so this is something we're supplying. You could build this yourself. So if we think of the read operation, the way what you might think is happening is that we have like a register inside of this and a possible implementation. So you have each of the registers, and a way we could implement this read is that they all go to a mux, which takes the register number to read signal, and that produces our value output. That would be a way we could implement this. You're not going to have to, but you could build this from the registers we've seen for reading and also for writing. So for writing, a way we could build this, we could say that RAX is either going to be fed back its own value, or it's going to get the data to write value depending on, you know, whether the register number to write is correct. So we could build that. You could write this out in HTLRS code where you implement all the muxes for all 15 of the registers for both reading and writing. But we're not going to have you do that because that's just tedious. Our assumption is going to be someone else has built this for you and you're using it. But there is a way you could build it from registers directly. We're just not doing that to save everyone time. So that's our register file. And all these components have names in HTLRS. You can also look them up in the README that's linked off the top of the website. So our indices to read are source A and source B, and there's corresponding outputs, output A and output B. Everything's name starting with reg, indicate register file. Our destinations are destination E with a corresponding input, input E, and destination M with corresponding input, input M. Questions about the register file? Yes?
Why are there two slots to write?
So there's one instruction that we're going to implement, pop, which writes to two different registers. So if you do pop QRAX, it's going to write to RSP and RAX. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. That's our register file. Now that we know about our register file, let's build our add instruction. So for the add instruction, the first thing you want to do is you want to read the instruction. We've seen how to do that. We're going to get the parts of the instruction, and we're going to get the opcode. We could use that to determine whether we're halting or not, for example. But more importantly, perhaps, we're going to get our two register indices from the instruction. And one thing we're going to want to do is we're going to have to read both of them. So to read those, I'm going to pass those indices to the source inputs, which means that as the corresponding outputs, I'm going to get the two register values. So as a notational thing, I in the textbook are going to use R of X to represent register X, and I'm going to use M of X to represent memory at address X. So I'm going to treat the registers like an array or memory like an array when writing things down, just to write things compactly. So in this case, R of source A is the register with index source A. So we have the register with index source A and source B, which is reg output A and output B, and we're going to add them together. That's the work the instruction actually does. And we'll see this pattern that for most of our instructions, the actual interesting work the instruction does is a very small part of our diagram. So we get the value added together, and then we're going to write it. To write it, we're going to pass the value we want to write, and also the index we want to write it to, into the register file, and at the rising edge of the clock, it's going to use those two values to actually update the register. Okay, so questions? Yes?
So M of X means the memory at address S1 doesn't mean memory at the content stored in register.
Question, M of X doesn't mean memory at address of X or content stored at register?
Yeah.
x, x is a number at address x, is how we're going to write that. If I want memory at based on the value of a register, in this sort of notation, I might write m of r of, you know, some index. Indicate read a register, access memory using the address you read from the register. Yes?
Can you please remind us what does the split
do? Question, what does the split do? So the split is going to take the different parts of our instruction. So if we look at the encoding of add, we want to extract RA and RB from the rest of the instruction. We also might want to extract the opcode from the rest of the instruction. The split is the circuitry which is doing that operation. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Okay, so if we think of how this works, so let's say we're executing this little program here. So our first instruction, we're going to read from address 0. We're going to get that we have RAX and RDX. So we're going to pass RAX and RDX as indices, which happen to be 0 and 2 if we look up in the table. And we're going to get the values, which is going to be, going to be, in this example, we say that initially RAX is 10, RBX is 20, RDX is 30. So we have 10 and 30 as our two values. We put them through our add circuit at some time later in the clock cycle. The add's going to figure out, oh, 10 plus 30 is 40. And we're going to end up passing 40 and index 2 to the register file in time for the rising edge of the clock. That rising edge of the clock happens. And we're going to advance to the next instruction and also write 40 into RDX. Some questions? Our picture here? Okay. So there's something I'm missing on this diagram. Could someone tell me what that is? Yeah. Need to add to the program counter. So right now, what's the program counter going to be? Who knows? There's nothing connected here. So we need to fix that. So we're going to do that by adding 2. And once we do that, now we can say what happens with the next instruction. So at the same time as we're writing 40 to RDX here, we're also going to be writing 2 into the PC. So at the same time, we're going to set RDX to 40 and the PC to 2. Then we're going to advance to our next instruction. And in our next instruction, we're going to be passing the index of RBX and the index of RDX to source A and source B, and also the index of RDX again to DESTY. We're going to read from RBX, we're going to read 20 from RDX, we're going to read 40, the new value. We're going to get 60, so we're going to end up writing 60 into the register file, and at the same time, we have a 2 here, which means we have a 4 as the new input to the PC, so as we change RDX to 60, we're also going to change the PC to 4. And move on to whatever instruction is after this second add here. Questions about the operation of this add processor? Yes?
Why am I adding 2,
given that we haven't seen that before? So if we go back to our encoding, we have 2 bytes in each of the add instructions. So this is the first byte, the second byte. So we need to add 2 to go to the next add instruction. That answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so I have this drawn out as a diagram. Let's get the HCL code for this. I'm going to go through the different pieces. A lot of this we've seen before. So we have our program counter register. In this case, I decided to declare it with lowercase p and uppercase p as the prefixes. It's 64 bits. And its initial value is 0, so we start at address 0. I have my PC increment code to add 2, because our add instructions are 2 bytes, and that's the only instruction we care about right here. I connect the program counter output to the instruction memory, so I read the instruction. And once I read the instruction, I have to get its parts. So I, based, because I set PC, iChain bytes contains the parts of the instruction, and I extract the parts I care about, so I have the opcode, which presumably the stuff that sets stat that I haven't shown here uses, and I also extract the 2 register indices, which are called RA and RB in the encoding table. I connect RA and RB to the source A and source B, so I read from those register indices, and when I read from them, they set reg output A and output B, which I am adding here and connecting to our next value input, along with setting the index I want to write to RB. So questions on how this code works and corresponds to our diagram? Yes. How do I determine what to add to it? I looked at my instruction encoding table and I saw, these instructions are 2 bytes. So that's why I added it. Okay. Other questions? Yeah. Can I go over setting the i10 bytes? What part about it? Like, why is it set, or why? Question is, why am I using those particular indices of i10 bytes? So if we think about how i10 bytes corresponds to our encoding, so since i10 bytes is little endian, this first byte of the instruction here, this is going to be i10 bytes 0 through 8, and the second part here is going to be i10 bytes 8 through 16. And that's because it's a little endian, so the lowest address byte is the least significant part. Within the bytes, I've written the byte such that the least significant part of the byte, as I've written it, is rightmost in the way I've written things here. So that means that this 0 here is i10 bytes 0 through 4, not 4 through 8, because that's the least significant part of that byte. And similarly, this ryy here is i10 bytes 8 through 12, not 12 through 16. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yes. Why am I storing the opcode? The assumption is I have code not shown that uses it to set stat. But if I didn't have that, indeed, I wouldn't need to store it. Other questions? Okay, so we've gone over a bit of HCLRS stuff. So our book has a hardware description language that's a bit different from HCLRS. Probably the biggest differences are that we call everything a wire, meaning a wire bundle. They separate things out into bools and ints, and their bool ints don't have a width. They're just however wide they need to be. We specify the widths explicitly. The book has some particular names. I'm going to often use those names on slides so you can read the book and not be confused and not have to like do term translation. But the book's names maybe aren't very good. Like VALC, probably a name you'd get marked down in an earlier programming class for writing as a variable name instead of like the constant from the instruction, you know, or something that suggests that, which VALC doesn't to me. But our textbook uses those names, so I will, just for consistency. And in the environment the textbook provided to people, those names were kind of fixed in the environment. In HCLRS, you can choose whatever names you like, so you can make things actually readable. The case expressions in the textbooks don't need a default case. We do need one. Also, in the textbook, they have an ALU, so which stands for arithmetic logic unit that they supply to students and require them to use. So we're going to implement that ourselves. So we should talk about what's an ALU. So ALU, as I said, it stands for an arithmetic logic unit. And it's generally some hardware component that takes in usually two inputs and also a signal selection operation and does some usually mathematical operation on those two inputs. So it might do an add or subtract or multiply or bitwise AND or bitwise XOR, and sort of one component supplied to do any of those operations. And us as a processor designer can use this component that someone else made to do whatever math we want to do. And a reason you have this as one component is that if you think of, say, for example, add and subtract, they're very similar operations. So we should be able to share a lot of hardware. So it doesn't make sense to have a separate adder and subtractor. We should have one component where we select between those operations, and usually most of the hardware for both of those operations is shared. So we're not going to actually supply you with an arithmetic logic unit. We're just going to say that if you want to do this, you can like write a mux where you say, if some case, do A plus B. If some other case, do A minus B. And just handle it that way. Even though, yes, sort of the detailed hardware implementation, you know, would want to like be a little more careful about sharing stuff between those operations. So I mentioned that the arithmetic logic unit like does math. And you might say, okay, so that means our processor must have two of them. Because if I look at this add processor here, I have something that does an addition and another thing that does an addition. We're going to only have one ALU. In the design that our textbook has, only has one ALU. We're going to have say that we have something that does the PC increment. We're not going to say that's an ALU. That's just going to be an adder. And in a real processor, that typically wouldn't be an ALU because, well, if you're just incrementing the program counter by a small number, that can be a specialized, faster, simpler circuit than a general ALU that also like knows how to do XOR and subtraction and all that stuff that we don't really care about for the PC increment. And also, you know, we still need separate circuits because we can't have, you know, we can't add two numbers and have the result at the end of the clock cycle to write to a register, and also add to the PC and have the result at the end of the clock cycle to write to the program counter. At the same time, we do actually need separate circuits for those. So you're going to build it yourself, and we're not going to worry about that. Well, if we were really designing this hardware in an efficient way, we'd want to share more stuff between that. We're not going to worry about those details in this class. That's more of a ECE class issue. How do you do addition, subtractions, and so on efficiently? It's not something we're going to talk about in this class. We're going to talk about how do we move the data to the hardware someone else built for us that does additions and subtractions efficiently. Okay. So that's about ALUs. We talked about how to implement add. And last time we had this knock and hold CPU, we also did jump. And one thing you might have noticed is that when I implemented add, I kind of forgot about implementing knock. So my question is, let's say I wanted to add back implementing knock. I want to either take my add CPU and implement knock in addition to add, or I want to take that knock and hold CPU and implement add in addition to knock and hold. And when I do that, I'm going to have cases where I need to make decisions where I didn't need to make them before. So we saw when we were doing knock versus halt, we needed a mux to decide, do I set the stat for the halt or for the knock? And when we were implementing jump, we need to decide, do I set the PC based on jumping or based on incrementing? So there's other decisions we're going to need to make for add, if we and knock together. My question is, where would we want to add a box to make those decisions? Give you a few minutes, you can check with your neighbor, see if you agree. Which places would be useful to have a box? Because we want to do different things for add instruction versus our knock instruction. For clarity, when I say register number to read, register number to write, this is the index. That's the type of number I mean. I don't mean actual value. Who'd like some more time? A couple people. Okay, so who thinks A? Okay, cool. B? Okay, A, catfish. C? A few people. D? Okay, and E? Okay, so most people don't say E, so I think I'll start with where we seem to have the most consensus. So E we don't need. So you might say, well, it doesn't, how we advance the burn counter depend on which instruction? Yes, but in all cases, we have a program counter register connected to the instruction memory, and any of the logic we're doing to control whether how the program counter changes is happening as we set it. That's the strategy we've been using it, because we compute where the next instruction is before the next clock cycle. Then we have that rising edge of the clock, and the PC should be set to where the new instruction is. So I guess then I'll get back to B. So for B, well, if we look at these two instructions, our add instruction was 2 bytes, and our nop instruction was 1 byte. So we need to do +1 or +2. We need something like a mux to decide whether the new program counter value is going to be adding 1 or adding 2. So we're going to need something like a mux for that. So B would be the case. Let's get to A. So people seem more skeptical of A. A is like the registers you read. And what you might say is, oh, if we're executing a nop, the nop instruction, it doesn't do anything with the registers. We shouldn't be reading any registers. The add instruction, definitely reading registers. It seems like we're making a decision here, read registers or not read registers. And I would say it's reasonable, therefore, to say, oh, we should set X source A and B based on whether or not we're reading registers. And I mentioned earlier that there's this special register none 15 value to not read anything. So I'd say this is okay, but it's not actually necessary. Why isn't it necessary? It doesn't matter if we read extra registers as long as we don't use them. So this is okay, but not needed. Because if we read the registers and don't use them, it's not going to be a problem. But I wouldn't blame you for saying, let's be not pass register numbers we don't care about when we have this value to indicate don't read a register that we can pass. Then we have C and D, where we seem to have a bit of a split. And the thing to note is that we have a difference in how the add instruction changes the registers and the nop instruction does. The add instruction is supposed to change a register, and the nop instruction isn't. And these two signals, C and D, control how registers change. So there better be something different about them between the add and the nop. So one of them better have a mux, at least. And there are basically two strategies we can use. So one strategy we could use is we could say, I'm going to pass a value that we just read to implement a nop here. So this is add. I want to add nop to this. One option we could say is, well, we're writing to RB here. So to implement that, I'm just going to, one thing I could do is I could add a mux to write back to RB the value that we just read from RB. So that would be one way we could be able to implement a nop, is that we write to RB just like an add does, but we write back not RB plus something else, we write back the same value we just read, so we don't change anything. That would be valid. I don't think that's the most straightforward solution, so an alternate solution is that we can, rather than passing RB, we can pass XF or reg none, the special constant in HCLRS, to indicate to the register file, don't change any registers this time. But both of these options would work. I think changing the index value, the dest value, is simplest, but you could also say, I'm not gonna leave dest the same, but I'm gonna just make sure I write the same value that I just write out. So that this gets to say this is preferred, and this would be alternative, write back the value we just read. Back same value we read. Just read. preferred, should be explicit, preferred write to reg none, which is xf, which is the do nothing value for the register file. Questions? Okay, so now that we've gone through where we need, so now we've gone through that, so we know how to sort of add instructions generally. So we're gonna apply this idea to more instructions, and we have this general pattern we're gonna think about. Okay, we have these different instructions we want to implement. Where do I need to make a decision based on what instruction I'm running? Where is it not the same for every instruction I care about? And we can use this idea to take a processor that implements a few instructions and add more on top of that until we have all the instructions we care about. And that's how we're going to build our processor. So let's apply this to these move to register instructions. Another set of useful instructions. And one thing you might notice that we haven't really talked about yet that we kind of need for this is that we have to access memory. So we need to talk about how we access memory. We might say, okay, we have data memory. We have the instruction memory. It can read from memory. So can't we just pass it this 10 plus RxX and read from there? And, well, if we're doing that, we have to somehow do that in a different cycle. We can't feed back the same value to the instruction memory because that would be one of those loops. That would be something we said we couldn't do. That's why we had registers. We can't have something that depends on itself. We need something to synchronize it so we don't get in-between values. So one way we can handle that is we can say, oh, we're going to run mrmoveq in two cycles. So we're going to have one cycle where we read mrmoveq. The next cycle, we're going to store stuff in registers and figure out that rather than reading an instruction, I need to read a value. That is not the design we're going to take. We're going to instead build our initial processor so every instruction runs in one cycle. We're not going to have to do things in multiple cycles. But that means if we want to read two different values from memory usefully, just using the instruction memory we have isn't going to be enough. So we're going to have the instruction memory and a second memory called the data memory. So we're going to have two different memories. And for reading, the data memory is going to work the same way as instruction memory. It's going to take in an address and give us the value at that address. The data memory is also going to support writing. So to control that, there's going to be a read and write enable signal to tell it which mode to be. Unlike the instruction memory, the output of the data memory is going to be 64 bits because that's the size we care about for our registers. Remember, the instruction memory, the output was 80 bits because that's the largest size of our instruction. But they're going to work in the same way. Once we input an address within the same clock cycle, we're going to get the value out. For writing, the way the data memory is going to work should remind you a lot of our register file, that we're going to supply a value we want to write and the place we want to write it, which in this case is going to be an address instead of a register index. And on the rising edge of the clock, after we've set up these two signals to say what to write, where to write it, the value in memory is going to change. And this is if we're in write mode, which we'll control by setting this write enable signal here. Questions on our data memory versus our instruction memory? Yes?
Are these two memories separated from each other on the physical hard drive?
Question, are these separated from each other? We'll talk about that a little bit next. But other than that, questions on their functionality? Okay. And like the instruction memory, there are signals that control the data memory. They're named. We have mem input for the input to write, mem adder for the address. and mem output is the output that we get from the data memory. So these signals are named from the perspective of the data memory. So mem output is its output, not what you're providing it. And we have the enable and disable, sorry, the write enable and read enable signals are mem write bit and mem read bit. Anyway, so you said, gosh, we have two memories. Are these actually separate memories? So it's going to turn out that if you write something to the data memory, you can read it back from the instruction memory later. And this is also how many most real CPUs work. And you might say, are they really separate memories then? And well, one way you could look at it is you could say, oh, these are just two different ports into the same memory. But in a typical physical processor design, we will have two separate components for the instruction memory and the data memory, but they won't actually be memories. Instead, they'll be caches. So we'll have two physically separate caches for data and instructions that are backed by the same memory. And we'll learn much more about that a bunch later in the semester when we talk about caches. But these instruction and data memory really represent on a real processor what would be an instruction cache and a data cache that ultimately use the same storage but are physically separate components. Okay, so now that we know how the data memory works, let's start thinking about implementing these instructions. And I mentioned our general strategy is going to be that we're going to have a straightforward way to hook up for these instructions, but they're going to want to do different things. So let's think about where for implementing all these instructions would we need boxes of these options. A couple minutes to think over that, check with your neighbor, see if you agree where we should need one. Who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we want one for A, for the register index inputs? Okay, a few people. For B, for the value inputs? Okay, seems like a majority. For the PC registers inputs? Seems like a slightly smaller majority. For the instruction memory's address input? No one? Okay, so we don't need the instruction memory's address input, that is correct. Because it's always going to come from the PC register. For the PC register, we do need one. It's not entirely obvious on this picture, but this instruction, this IRemove Q here, is 10 bytes of machine code, as is this MRemove Q if we refer to our encoding table. But the RRemove Q is only 2 bytes. So we need something to choose whether to add 2 or 10. So that's going to need something for the PC registers input to decide how much we're incrementing by, something like a mux for that. For the register file's value input, if we think about what this instruction does, we're writing a constant from the instruction to a register, or we're writing a register value to a register. Those come from two different places. One of them's from the instruction memory, another's from the register file. We need to decide between those two values, so we're going to need something to do that. And also, we have this third option, something from the data memory. Those are three different places we need to get values. We need to somehow choose between them. We need something like a mux to do that. So for A, one thing you might say is, oh, well, RRemove Q doesn't read from RxX, and RRemove Q and MRemove Q do, but remember, it doesn't really matter if we read from extra registers. And then you might say, okay, let's look at what we're writing. We're always writing to RYY, so that seems fine. And again, there's a case where maybe there's some information which, you know, is kind of hidden on this slide. So if we look at the instruction encoding, the destination register for RRemove Q and IRemove Q is RB, which is in the least significant bits of the second byte of the instruction. For MRemove Q, it's RA, that is not a typo, which is in the most significant bits of the second byte of an instruction. So it turns out we're going to need it because IRR and RR use RB as destination, as the dest, but the MR uses RA as the destination. And we need to supply the right register index to the register file that comes from the right part of the instruction, so we're going to need a mux to do that. Some questions? Figured all these out? Yes?
The mux does not have to differentiate from all instructions mutually, it just has to differentiate
from someone. Question: the mux doesn't have to differentiate all instructions, just has to differentiate from someone. So the mux, for example, for A, so it seems like we only need to choose between RA and RB. So all the mux is going to be, all the mux's selection input is going to be doing is saying, is this an instruction that uses RA to write or RB to write? Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Yes? Question why I need a mux for the register file's value? So for IRemove Q, we're writing this constant. Where are we going to get that constant in our circuit? Well, it's from the instruction memory, ultimately. So we have some wire from the instruction memory going into the register file. For implementing RRemove Q, we want to get this value from a register. Where can we get that? From the register file. So we have a wire from the register file back into the register file to write that value. Those seems like those either need to go, it seems like we want to put them to the same place. And that means we need a mux to decide which one we want to have connected during which instruction. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Comments? Okay, so let's go through actually sort of drawing out this circuit. And I'm going to start by drawing out RRemove Q. So for RRemove Q, my first step is going to read the instruction because I need RA and RB. I'm going to take RA and RB. I'm just going to supply them both to the register file. We don't actually need RB to read from RB, but we know we're going to use that later for mRemove Q, so I'll just do it now. And I'm also going to write to RB because that's what rRemoveQ wants to do. I'm going to take the value I read from register RA, and I'm going to feed it back. That's rRemoveQ. Just writing it back to register B. So this is the way we split things up. This is RA, RB, and RB. So then I'm going to add iRemoveQ. And for iRemoveQ, well, writing back the value I just read from the register file is not going to work. So I'm going to add a mux here. And that mux is going to be controlled by the opcode. So I'm going to use this 2 or 3 here to decide what to do. And, you know, sometimes I'm going to use the output of the register file. And sometimes I'm going to take a value from the instruction, which we call an immediate, which is going to be representing V or D in our encoding table. In this case, we have V that we're passing into the smux and going to send to our register file as the value to write. So then I want to add mRemoveQ. So for mRemoveQ, I want to take D plus RB. So I have D on my immediate wire, and RB, because of what I did in the first step, is already coming out of the register file, so we're going to want to add them together. And so that looks something like this. So we're taking RB and D, adding them together using our ALU, and sending them as the address input to our data memory. We're presumably going to select to read, and then we're going to get a value, and that's going to be another possible thing we want to write instead of the constant from the instruction or the value from the register file. And in addition, I needed to choose to use RB or RA. I need to write to RA, so I'm going to add a mux before destination E, the index to write to choose RA instead of RB because of how the encoding works, that we're writing to RA, not RB. So questions? Yes?
Why do I need the ALU?
So, like, why do I need to do an addition here? Or is the question?
Yes.
So, what this D parentheses RB means is take the constant D and add it to the value we read from register RB. This circuit here, that ALU, is what's doing that addition that needs to happen before we can access memory to know where to access it. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah.
I'll just want to know what which of the registers provided are, SRC and which are destination.
How do I know which register, how does the register file know which is source and destination? So in HTLRS, we have just a fixed set of names, and there's two source names you have and two dest names, and the source names always correspond to these two outputs. The destination names always correspond to these two inputs. And that's just fixed. We've just chosen that in advance when whoever built the register file for you built it. Does that answer your question? Obviously, they could have chosen other things, but they didn't think that was useful. Other questions? Comments? So there's one thing missing from this picture still, which is we need to add to the PC. We mentioned that when we looked at our boxes. So that's our circuit here. Okay, so now we have move to register. Let's add our remaining move instruction, which is going to be register to memory move. So this is a move to memory. So in order to move to memory, let's think about what we need to add here. So can someone tell me something I need to change on this picture to implement RM move queue? So register to memory move. So I want to be able to support that. What should I add? We obviously can't do it now. We're missing a bunch of things. And one strategy to answer this is, can someone give me a description of what does RM move Q do? Yeah. So instead of writing the value, so what value?
The value
coming out of the bottom. Okay, so this value here, okay. I think we can be simpler than that. But so instead of writing a value to register, you write it to memory. So part of it. In particular, we don't even have that many choices because it's register to memory move, not anything to memory move. So instead of writing the value of RA to RB, we're writing it to memory. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the value of RA and write it to memory. So we can go through that description of what we're going to do. So let's start, I'll start to take the value of RA. So where's the value of RA? Do we have it? The answer is yes, it's right here. And we want to write that to memory. So if you want to write something to memory, we better give it as the data input to the data memory. That's how we're going to do writes. So I'm going to send this over to my data input. And I also need to tell the memory to write. So I have this write enable signal I didn't draw yet, which needs to be set based on what instruction we're running. So I have write enable based on the opcode. Now, one thing we need to be careful at is, where do I want to write to memory? I want to write to memory at address D plus RB. So do I have that value? Yes. It's actually the same value I already computed here. This is going to be D plus the value of register B. And this is why our textbook authors decided that MR move Q would write to RA. So we have one circuit to compute D plus RB, and we could use that for two instructions. If they didn't do that, then we'd have to change something about how this addition is done here in order to compute the right value. But they designed things so we didn't have to do that. Okay, so there's one more thing I'm missing here. Someone tell me what that is. Yeah.
You don't want to write to RA on accident.
So we don't want to write to RA on accident. So why are we doing that? So you say you don't want to write to RA on accident. I agree. Why would we be writing to RA? So we're taking the value from memory, and how is it getting into RA? The write step, sorry? Okay, so you say we're putting a value in here, and you say we're writing it to somewhere. So you say we're writing it to RA, so we could be writing it to RA. So RA and RB are the possible places we could be writing it. Because those are two inputs that we could have selected for destination E. And we have some sort of value we're supplying to the register file. And no matter what that value is, we don't want to write it to RA or RB. Because that's not something RMoveQ is supposed to do. It's not supposed to change RA or RB. So we need some way of fixing that. And the easiest way, so probably the easiest way of fixing that is to have an option here to write nothing, to write to OXF, to write to register none. There might be an alternate solution where we write back the same value we just read if we're very careful. But that would be a typical thing we would do is we would add, so we'd end up adding a register none option to destination E so we can avoid writing anything in a nice clean way. And also we'd have this write enable signal that comes from convert opcode to decide to write only for our move queue and not for any of the other instructions which aren't supposed to modify memory. Okay, so questions about my overall move instruction here. Okay, so something you might notice is that as I have more muxes to add and more decisions to make, that I'm adding lots of circuitry to indicate how these control signals are set, these things which decide what to do for one instruction versus another. And when we're talking about a processor, we'll often distinguish between what we call the data path, which is where the actual values move, and the control path, which is that logic which like uses the opcode to decide which option mux is select and so on. This is not like a firm line. So for example, like the condition codes are kind of part of the control path and kind of part of the data path. So I'm not going to like test you on what's control path versus what data path, but what I'd like you to know about that is that we'll be omitting, and textbook will omit, and lots of like real descriptions of processors will omit large parts of the control path from diagrams. We'll focus on the data path, how data moves in the instructions, and what the options are, but we're not going to draw all of the control path because that's going to be very messy, and you can usually figure it out from descriptions of the instructions and so on. So on this diagram here, everything I've highlighted in red is control path. And on future diagrams, I'm just not going to draw that. Yes, there's some signal that controls all the muxes. I'm not going to draw it because it takes up a lot of space, and it's not really what we're interested in when we're thinking about how is our processor designed. So questions on control path versus data path. Before we stop seeing control path on our diagrams. Okay. So to finish up for today, we'll talk about stages. So we have our overall move implementation, and our textbook divides the processor up into what they call stages. And I've highlighted their stages on this diagram. So we have this fetch stage where we read the instruction and also increment the PC. We have a decode stage, and you'd think that would be where we split up the instruction into its components, like array and opcode. Nope, that's not where it happens. The decode stage is where we read registers. Yes, not a great name. The textbook's not the only one to use this not great name for this stage. But that's what happens in decode, is we read registers. We have an execute stage where we do an ALU operation. So for these move instructions, that's computing D plus RB. We have a memory stage where we read or write memory, and we have a write-back stage where we write the register file, and we have a PC update stage where we compute the next value for a PC, like jump versus a normal increment. So right now, these stages are a conceptual division of the logic of a processor. Their main usefulness is that when we're designing our processor, we can think about, rather than when I'm adding this new instruction, like say push, what's happening for push, I don't have to think about all that. You just say, what should happen for push in decode? That's sort of the main goal of it. Also, later on, we're going to use these stages to design a processor which executes every instruction in multiple cycles, where the stages will actually happen one after the other. But that's not what happens now. The timing now is determined by that clock cycle and when things update. And for the most part, we've learned, well, the data memory, it does writes at the rising edge. Registers do writes at the rising edge. Register file does writes at the rising edge, and that's what determines our time. And we learned that like the adder like adds things as its input changes. So these stages are just a conceptual division of the instruction. But to figure out when things actually happen right now, you want to think about how do the components of the processor work. Later on, we're going to make some changes to the design of our processor to have things take multiple cycles, and these stages will become sort of more important to the timing. But right now, for timing, it doesn't work that way. So with that in mind, let's think about adding push to the process, to sort of the design for move I showed. So push is really complicated. So push is going to read an instruction to figure out its push. it's going to change memory, because it writes a value to memory. It's going to change the stack pointer. And also it's going to change the PC to advance to the next instruction. And my question is, I told you that what we would care about is how do registers, the register file and memory work? So if we added this instruction, when would these four things happen relative to each other? So I'll give you a couple minutes to think about that, check with your neighbors, see if you agree and what should happen. Okay, so who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, and no clue. Okay, so E seems to be our consensus answer, but let's think of how the components work. So the instruction being read, that's the instruction memory. This is, you know, triggered by input changing, which is shortly after the clock cycle starts, shortly after PC register outputs a new value. New value, which is near the beginning of the clock cycle. So that's when one is going to happen. One is first. I think we all agree with that. Memory changing. So this is at the rising edge of the clock, using signals set up earlier. So I think a big point of confusion is that, yes, earlier in the clock cycle, we're going to prepare the address to write to and the value to write, but the write doesn't happen until the rising edge of the clock, because that's what triggers the data memory to actually change memory. And the same thing is true about the register file. The register file, we're going to set up the register index to write and the value during the clock cycle, but the rising edge is what's going to trigger the actual change to the register value. And the same thing is also true with the PC register. We're going to set up the new next value, the PC plus 2 in this case, but the actual change is going to happen based on that rising edge of the clock signal. So the best answer is B as far as when the changes actually happen, even though, yes, the like computations of what memory should change to and what the PC should change to and what the register, what RSP should change to, all happen earlier in the clock cycle at different times, depending on how fast things can be computed. So questions about how I figure that out? So, and or timing in general. And with the stages, the thing to remember is right now the stages are just conceptual. Later on, we'll change our circuit by adding registers to make them actually affect the timing. But right now, they're just a way of dividing up the work of the circuit. They don't actually tell us when things happen yet. And just a logistical note, next time we'll probably be in Gilmer. There will be probably an email about that. They went to kick us out of this room.